Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Andrew Foster is with us in the studio. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
So what do you have for us today?
Well, today, Ben, I want to talk a little bit about life insurance.
Okay.
And we've got a case this morning that goes into some detail regarding life insurance and beneficiary designations that I think's very important.
All right. I get to play judge here.
You get to wield the old gavel of justice this morning, Ben. So, that'll be fun. But, first, let's just start off and talk some general rules about life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
As far as taxability,
mm-hmm.
Ben, it's a great vehicle for, you know, saving money and then mm-hmm. also your death benefit is non-taxable mm-hmm. in most cases. So that's a good general rule there. Whoever did the whole life insurance lobby got a good break there.
Yeah.
Second, in North Carolina, if you designate a beneficiary for your life insurance proceeds, then those proceeds are not going to be available to pay creditors of your estate.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? That means if you have credit card bills or you run up medical debt or you have other issues out there with creditors, and you designate a beneficiary of your life insurance policy and it goes directly to that person, it does
can't
not
claw back.
That's right. It's not listed on the inventory, for instance,
right.
And it's not one of those assets that can be pulled back in to pay creditors of the estate. So
mm-hmm.
again, another valuable benefit there.
Doesn't mean it's not counted though, right?
Yeah, it's countable for as far purposes. As estate tax yeah, purposes. Right, you're yeah. exactly right. But as far as assets that can be used to pay creditors under state law,
mm-hmm.
no.
Okay.
Not going to be that way as long as you designate a beneficiary. And then the other good thing about life insurance is it's a fairly easy asset. You know, once you pass away, the individual that's the named beneficiary of the policy just simply has to present a death certificate along with some claim forms.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, they get a check in their hot little hand.
Yeah, right.
So, it's a good way. It's a real easy asset to administer. But sometimes these general rules go awry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we end up today. We've got, a case called Dudek v. Dudek,
mm-hmm.
JP. And David, and the facts are fairly straightforward and simple. We'll go through them quickly. In 2001, JD obtained a $1 million Genworth life insurance policy. And a few years later, JD was diagnosed with leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
So he has this disease, and his brother David says, "Hey, look, guess what? I'll give you my bone marrow so you can have a bone marrow transplant,"
mm-hmm.
which ended up prolonging, JD's life. In 2009, JD says, "Hey, look, brother, thanks for that bone marrow.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do something real nice for you. I'm going to set up an irrevocable life insurance trust, and I'm going to name you as the trustee and the beneficiary of this trust."
Okay.
And so in the trust, it states that he was transferring the Genworth policy over to David. And again, David's the trustee and the beneficiary. 1 month later, JD submits paperwork to Genworth. And it's signed by him and David as trustee, requesting that the owner and the beneficiary of the policy be changed to this irrevocable life insurance trust.
Mm-hmm.
Very typical.
Mm-hmm.
So you set up the trust, you do the forms to transfer ownership and beneficiary designation.
Putting the asset into the trust. Is
you
that
got
what
it.
It's doing?
Yeah, okay. That's right. Formally doing it with the company.
Okay.
However, when JD was filling out the forms, he was crossing out some terms and adding in some additional terms, but never initialed any of the changes that he
mm-hmm.
set forth. So Genworth gets the forms, sees, you know, they're signed, but looks at all these changes that were made, notice they're not initialed. And so they send a letter back to JD and say, "Hey, look, we're going to reject these forms that you have transferring this life insurance policy over to your irrevocable
mm-hmm.
life insurance trust, because they're just simply uninitialed changes that we're not allowed to approve."
Right.
They send the letter to JD, do not send any correspondence to David regarding the fact that these, you know, the form was rejected.
Because he's not yet the trustee if they haven't.
So basically they're like, "Look, we're sending it to the owner. The owner
yeah.
right now is JD, so we're
yeah.
sending the information to there." 6 years later and shortly before JD's death, he executes a change of beneficiary form, not surprisingly, and designates 9 new beneficiaries, none of which are his brother David.
Uh-oh, they've had a falling out somewhere along
That's
the line.
That's right. JD dies in 2016, and of course David says he thought everything was hunky-dory fine, so he goes, contacts Genworth and says, "What do I need to do to claim this life insurance policy for this, you know,
mm-hmm.
trust?" And they say, "Whoa, hold the phone. You're not the beneficiary." And to his surprise, you know, he finds out that there's 9 beneficiaries and that Genworth has taken the position that they're going to go ahead and pay that money out to the beneficiaries, and they do so. And so David goes ahead and files a lawsuit against Genworth and the 9 beneficiaries. And really, Ben,
that's the estate he's filing.
That's right. So he's filing the estate. He's filing against the beneficiaries. He's filing against the life insurance company, all the parties that are associated with this transfer. And really, the ultimate question is that was there a gift of this life insurance policy, you know, even though the company, Genworth, didn't recognize the gift being formally made and transferred over.
Right.
And so the Superior Court rules that the trust was never funded, meaning that that policy was never formally transferred over through Genworth, and therefore no gift was completed. The trust was not funded. Therefore, the trust is unenforceable.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the Court of Appeals said, Ben? Do they rule for David as the trustee of the islet, or do they rule that no, JD had the right to change his policy the whole time, because once that form was rejected by the company, there was what I'll call an uncompleted gift, and the gift never was formally made to the trust.
Okay, I think one of the key factors there is that they did not reject the policy. They only rejected that it was not, that the changes to the policy were not valid. And so the policy itself was valid without the changes that they had made because they did not initial them.
Yeah, so it's interesting. That's analysis. The court didn't go into that. Mm-hmm. But what they said was, as they went through the elements of a gift, and they said, to make a gift, you have to have capacity. Mm-hmm. Well, that's clear. You know, when JD was making the changes to everything, he had the capacity to make it. They look at intent. And they say here that the trust the trust document says that you're giving this policy to the trust. That's what the trust says itself. And the trust is irrevocable, meaning it's, you know, once it's done, it's done. Delivery. JD signed the trust document, and he gave it to his brother as trustee of the trust. And then you have acceptance. That's the final element of a gift. Well, of course, David's accepting everything because he was under the impression the whole time that the trust owned this policy. The trust was the beneficiary of this policy, and he only learned that it wasn't when his brother died. So that's the analysis the court went in. So the court basically says that JD no longer owned this policy.
Right.
Therefore could not make these beneficiary designation changes. And that even though the company didn't recognize it.
Yeah, but the company was only not recognizing the changes of the terms.
Yeah, well, they rejected
the
policy,
but that was false on their behalf. I mean, that was not valid.
So the court's reasoning is that, you know, JD could not change these beneficiaries. However, they gave the company a pass. They said Genworth is off the hook because they didn't accept the form.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're saying, okay, the company's off the hook, but the fact is that, David, you have the right to go after these 9 beneficiaries to try to get money from them.
Oh, well, that's
all
bad.
Of which are all over luck. The country. Good luck. Exactly right, Ben. So, you know, I think that there's 3 big lessons.
Is that still an open case then?
Yeah, well, it could go to the Supreme Court. The Court of Appeals.
As far as him going after the.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So it could go up to the Supreme Court. It could stop right here.
Could be a settlement.
My guess is it stops right here. Yeah. And there could be some settlement amongst, but probably with 9 beneficiaries, it's going to be tough to get a settlement. You know, and that's a couple of different things.
Depends on how much it's for. I mean,
$1 million, and each one of them got a little over $100,000. So, you know, there's meat on the bone on this one. You know, number one, I think that the lessons that we can learn from this case is, you know, you go through this process of creating this trust, Ben, you know, and it's formal. It's at the lawyer's office. It's what I tell my clients all the time. You're executing your will right here at the office. But you gotta follow up on the back end in these forms where you actually transfer the ownership or you designate beneficiaries or you go to the bank and you're putting beneficiaries on bank accounts or you're changing bank accounts, you know, to joint with right of survivorship or away from joint with right of survivorship. It's so important because those are more informal things. You know, you're filling this form out at home potentially and you don't realize how important it really is because that form, you know, him making those changes, not initialing it, put them into the court system.
Right.
In all
right.
honesty. So you gotta, you can create the trust all day long, mm-hmm. but you gotta get those beneficiary designation forms correct. And that's when I like to have my clients fill them out at the office with me.
Yeah. And here's a case where, you know, the insurance company, as far as letting them off the hook, it was not a legal opinion that sent those forms back. It was a administrative
one. That's right. Administrative. Yeah. Changes these forms and up.
You didn't initially.
That's right.
Initially and send it back.
That's right. And I think the other big thing here we can learn is
but I want to know what happened between the brothers.
Yeah, I know. What was the falling out there?
Yeah, that's the real story.
That's
a Lifetime movie story.
The other big point right here then is that David needed to act quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whenever we have an issue like this with life insurance proceeds, you must get to the courthouse before those proceeds are paid out from that policy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is that important? Because if he would have gotten to the courthouse and before Genworth paid this policy out and filed a lawsuit, he could have asked for an injunction or could have asked for the proceeds to be held by the court mm-hmm. pending the outcome of the
trial. Well, he didn't know there was a race.
I know, but I'm saying is the minute that you realize this, you have to act very, very quickly. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the big lesson here is that if you figure out there's a problem with life insurance proceeds, contact us at Harvell and Collins and let us go to work for you because timing is essential here.
Mm-hmm.
If David could have filed this action before those proceeds were paid out, well, guess what? If he wins the case, he gets $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's he left with? Going after 9 beneficiaries all over the country to try to get back money that they've probably already spent.
Yeah, if he gets 10 cents on the dollar, he's probably going to be lucky.
That's right. Time is of the essence when you come to these life insurance issues.
All right. And again, if you want to contact Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, you can go online at harvellandcollins.org. You can also give them a call and set up the appointment. And you can email Andrew too, afoster@harvellandcollins.com, to reach him for an appointment, 726-9050.